Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. If you want to get in, feel free to do so. First 2 hours are going to be a little bit more open. Hour number three, we got not one but two guests joining us. Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com, breaking down all things LSU and giving us a preview of SEC Media Days in Hoover. And then we'll be talking to Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South, all things college football at 8:32. We got a lot to get to. Saints released their training camp schedule. David Griffin makes comparisons from Drew Holiday to Steve Nash. That's setting the bar high for his leader of his franchise. And some LSU baseball talk. But we're going to start off today's show talking about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Progressive Field in lovely Cleveland, as Drew Carey used to tell us, Cleveland rocks. It rocked last night as, once again, the American League bested the National League, this time 4-3. It is the seventh win in a row for the AL All-Stars over the National League. 4-3. And the American League was aided by the performance of, you guessed it, the Houston Astros. The Stros All-Stars stepped up in a big way. The first three hits of the night for the AL all came from Houston Astros. George Springer, Alex Bregman, Michael Brantley. That started off the night on the right foot for the American League. Now, the AL did not play to run until the bottom of the second, and then added another one in the bottom of the fifth before sending two more in the bottom of the seventh. National League tried to rally, scoring two runs in the top of the eighth, but it wasn't enough, as Chapman was able to come in into the ninth and close it out with the victory. How did the Astros do across the board? Springer, Bregman, Brantley all got hits, and Justin Verlander was phenomenal. He only pitched the one inning but struck out two. DJ LeMahieu was 0-for-2, the former LSU star who was the starting second baseman, New York Yankees star. It was a bit of a pitcher's duel. Hits were not easy to come by, rather. The American League did have eight of them. The National League only was able to manage five. Clean game, errors-wise, not a single error was committed. The American League threw out nine pitchers. Nine. Welcome to the All-Star Game. Verlander, Tanaka, Barros, Bieber. No relation to Justin, I do believe. Shane Bieber is no relation to Justin, in case you were wondering. Shane Bieber did win the All-Star Game MVP. He became the first Cleveland Indians player to win the Most Valuable Player since 1997. That was when, of course, Sandy Alomar Jr. took home the award. He pitched one inning, striking out three. So he had a perfect frame. That's what gave him the bump. Even though there was some talk that Michael Brantley was in consideration as well for the MVP award. Chapman came in, closed the door, as I said, struck out the entire side there in the ninth inning. So the Astros stepped up, helped the American League win yet another one. The National League, on the other hand, not a lot to report on, so to speak. As I said, hits were hard to come by. Pete Alonso, who won the home run derby, he went 1-for-2, had two RBIs. The Mets rookies having had himself a heck of a holiday weekend. Wins the home run derby, has two RBIs in the All-Star game. Josh Bell got a hit. That's the Pittsburgh Pirates star. Ketel Marte got a hit. David Dahl got a hit. Not exactly the big names. Charlie Blackman. Freddie Freeman for the Braves. Javier Baez. Chris Bryant. Christian Yelich. They all went hitless. The All-Star game is the unofficial midway point for the baseball season. The actual midway point is shortly before the All-Star game. But it's the midway point for Major League Baseball, Midsummer Classic once again. The American League wins once again. Thankfully, the All-Star game does not determine home field advantage for the World Series anymore. Oh, that was just a terrible decision that they had for a while. But it's interesting. As I said, the AL has won 7 in a row now. They've also won 11 of 14 dating back to 2003. That was the year that the game ended in a tie. Why the dominance? And does it really matter? Is it really a reflection on anything? I don't know. It is interesting to know that the American League has won now 7 in a row and 11 of the last 14. So for a decade plus, they've dominated the Midsummer Classic over the Senior League. They're on such a dominant run that they now lead the all-time series by a few games. The National League traditionally led the series, the All-Star Game series. The Senior League led. Not so much anymore because of the dominance that the American League has flexed since the early 2000s. The AL got on the board first. Of course, Alex Bregman scored on a Michael Brantley double in the second inning.
I mean, I try to hit the ball up in the air in the cage.
Somebody go get that. That's in the gap.
Done!
Acuna going to get it. He'll get it back in. Here comes Bregman. Throw home by Armago is too late. And the AL jumps on top. 1-0.
That's Bregman scoring on that Brantley double there in the second inning. The game would remain 1-0 until the fifth when Jorge Polanco played at Gary Sanchez on an infield single, making it 2-0 AL. I love the fact that the first run of the game, because it's the All-Star game. So Joe Buck is in the middle of interviewing Christian Yelich. And Cody Bellinger. And they're out in the actual field, right? And then Brantley gets the hit to score Bregman. So, you know, I'm sure they weren't distracted at all talking to Joe Buck during the game. After the fifth, the offense started to kind of improve a little bit. Charlie Blackman homered to put the NL on the board in the sixth. Then the AL struck for a pair of runs in the seventh. Matt Chapman scored on a double play ball. And then later, Joey Gallo homered on the first pitch he saw from left-hander reliever Will Smith. Rangers all-star just mashed the ball. As I already mentioned, Pete Alonso, who won the home run derby, and more importantly, it's $1 million payday, which doubled his salary for the year. He singled to score with the bases loaded in the eighth for a two RBI knock. But that was it. He was stranded on the base paths. Tanaka earned the win as he came in and pitched the second inning following Verlander's clean first inning. Clayton Kershaw was charged with the loss, and Chapman, who struck out the side in the ninth, picked up the save. CeCe Sabathia, appearing in his final All-Star game, made a mound visit with two outs in the ninth so he could receive one last Cleveland ovation. Remember, he began his career. He played for the Tribe before eventually ending up with the Yankees and winning a World Series championship. Cleveland pitcher Shane Bieber, as I said, pitched an inning and struck out the side in the fifth, was named MVP, which, of course, the home fans appreciated. The all-time record now in the All-Star Game Series as the AL up 45-43-1. The infamous tie will never go away. It will always be in the record books. Cody Schuetz, you love baseball. Baseball's been very good to you. Did you watch any of last night's Midsummer Classic, my friend?
Nope. And not by choice. I'm sure I am not the only one out there that will share this frustration. DirecTV, go suck an egg. Maybe not suck an egg, but, you know, it's not DirecTV. Let me rephrase. It's not DirecTV. It is whatever. I can't remember the company name. But, yes, DirecTV and Fox right now have some sort of channel dispute.
They're
ongoing.
Beefing.
They are beefing. According to the little message that comes on my television screen when I do flip it over, DirecTV said they have done all they can do to attempt to bring Fox back. It happened to me for the championship game of the World Cup as well, but I was able to find like another TV because I wasn't at my house. I was still in Marksville at Paragon, so I was able to find another TV that had that game on. But since I was at my house last night for the All-Star game, flip it over to Fox, and there is no Fox on DirecTV right now, so I did not watch the game.
That saddens me.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed as well.
That saddens me. It saddens me, but only to a certain extent because you did a little bit of your humble brag there with your dropping Paragon. Yes, I spent the weekend in Marksville. Big balling, out of control, Cody Schuetz.
Right.
Obviously.
And slide that in.
So, yes, AL wins another All-Star game. And a pitcher for the hometown squad gets the MVP. And Shane, I am not related to Justin Bieber. We'll talk more about the All-Star game after this break. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on KDN Sports Station 103.7 The Game. That's how last night's Midsummer Classic wrapped up. 4-3 victory for the American League over the National League. Seventh in a row, 11 of the last 14. That's a run of dominance for the AL over the NL since the infamous tie game back in 2003. The AL now leads the all-time series in the Midsummer Classic as well. The Houston Astros did a heck of a job there at the All-Star game. Bregman, Brantley, Springer all got hits. Bregman scored. Brantley drove them in. We heard that in the first segment at the top of the hour. Justin Verlander came out, started the game, pitched a magnificent first inning, striking out two batters, setting the tone for the AL, so to speak. But it's his performance, it's not his performance on the mound that I want to further discuss. It's what he said heading into the All-Star game. Verlander blasted Major League Baseball on Monday for its sharp increase in home runs this season. The Astros starting pitcher and former Cy Young Award winner and league MVP called the current baseball's, quote, a cuss word joke, end quote, claiming Manfred worked with Rawlings to increase offensive production. Quote, Major League Baseball is turning this game into a joke. I find it really hard to believe that Major League Baseball owns Rawlings and just coincidentally the balls become juiced, end quote. That is what Verlander told ESPN's Jeff Passan. Manfred, the commish, Rob Manfred, didn't directly respond to Verlander's comments on Tuesday, but he did double down on his stance that Major League Baseball has not altered the baseballs.
I think that the issue with the baseballs that is really the most important one. It's a handmade product with all natural materials. There's going to be variation in the baseball year to year. I mean, that's just a reality. I think that we want to focus on two things. Number one, we've tried to be absolutely transparent on the ball. We did a study. We published a study. We put it out to the press. If there comes a point sometime in the future where we decide to make a change in the baseball, believe me, you guys will know about it first.
Believe me, we'll know about it first. I don't believe that.
Shouldn't the players, coaches, and pitchers know about it first, not the media? If they decide to make that change, Rob Manfred shouldn't run to the newspapers or to the bloggers and be like, hey, we changed the baseball. You should probably go tell the pitchers and the players. That's the thought.
And why not have some input from them? If you are going to be making some type of alterations, shouldn't the people that are using the product on a daily basis for the sport that's generating you hundreds of millions of dollars? Just a thought process. Manfred said, he's going to say, I'm not going to respond specifically. I'm going to stand by what I said. What we need to be on the baseball issue is transparent and forward-looking. That sounds like just company talk. There's been no intentional alteration in the manufacturing process. Okay. Home run rates have skyrocketed in Major League Baseball this year. Players are on pace, Cody, for 6,668 home runs this season. We've been told that chicks love the long ball. That's an increase from the previous record of 6,105 back in 2017. Now, Verlander is possibly feeling this way because he has allowed a league-high 26 home runs this year, even though he's 10-4 on the year with an ERA of 2.98 and has struck out 153 batters and only 126 and two-thirds innings of work, and is in the mix for the American League Cy Young Award. But the question does need to be asked, does Verlander have a point? Has something happened with the balls? Are they being juiced? Have they changed baseballs to increase the home run production to get people excited about watching the game? because Verlander's not the only one. The data is showing that the baseball used in the big leagues is flying farther than ever before. So it's interesting to know if this is in fact something that's going on. Has there been some type of scientific change in the way that the baseballs are being made, or are hitters just that more efficient? Has the game changed to the point of hitting for average and making sure to get a single here or a single there? That's no longer part of the game. Alex Bregman talked about this the other day, saying he could be a 330 hitter if that's what the game needed these days, but it's not. Everything is about OPS. So it's all about home runs. So have this generation of Major League Baseball players just changed their mindset, changed their approach to hitting, where they're putting more of an emphasis on the power hitting, on becoming sluggers, on getting the home runs and the extra base hits, and they're ignoring the older days of hitting for average? I don't know. It's interesting to know, though. Already talked about the record. Charlie Morton, though, the current Tampa Bay Rays right-hander, former Stro, said he noticed even back in 2015 that he suddenly seemed to get less sink on his pitches. He adjusted by altering his pitching style. He now thrives with high fastballs and curves, but would still like to know why the ball changed. Quote, if the ball's different and intentionally different, I guess the one thing I would ask is just some transparency. If the league is trying to do something different and get a different result with balls in play, I think for history's sake and for the integrity of the game, there would be transparency, end quote. I do think it's interesting, and you are seeing a lot of guys. You're seeing a lot of home run balls. Once again, is this due to a change in the technology with the ball, or is this a change in approach and mindset in modern-day hitters? We'll have to find out. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, the Tigers made it official yesterday, made a change to the LSU baseball staff. We'll talk about it right now.
Sports Radio Update starts now.
It's seven in a row for the American League. I'm Rob Bushka. The Midsummer Classic from Cleveland goes to the Junior Circuit, 4-3, thanks to Aroldis Chapman of the Yankees nailing down a save. Pete Alonso made it close, a one-run game in the eighth inning. It was a late addition to the roster. Shane Bieber striking out the side in the fifth in front of the home crowd. He took home MVP honors. Yankee pitcher Masahiro Tanaka earned the win. Dodgers' Clayton Kershaw tabbed with the loss. Update in the association, the Knicks restructuring a two-year deal with Reggie Bullock. They could also get free agent Marcus Morris, who could leave and bail on his two-year $20 million deal with San Antonio to opt for the Big Apple. And both Instant Replay and Coaches Challenges will have a new look this year. It was voted on unanimously by the teams. Wimbledon, the top three men in the world, all in action, starting with Novak Djokovic at 8 Eastern. This is NBC Sports Radio.
Welcome back to the show. You are listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell Simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's 24 hours of sports coverage free over the air. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to, feel free. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. I do want to talk a little baseball, but get away from the big leagues, head over to college. LSU made it official. It was the worst-kept secret in the state of Louisiana for college baseball. Eddie Smith has now officially been reunited with Paul Maneri. After helping guide the Tulane Green Wave baseball team to a record-breaking season earlier this year, in a second season with the program, Smith has been officially hired as LSU's new volunteer coach slash hitting coach. Mineri made the announcement on Tuesday afternoon. Quote, "We're extremely excited to add Eddie Smith to our staff, and we're very fortunate to have him. Eddie is a very experienced coach with a proven track record of success. He combines his intelligence and coaching ability with a tremendous work ethic, and he's going to be a very impactful asset to our program," end quote. Smith is 35 years old, so he's a nice, young, dynamic coach. He helped lead the Green Wave as they set American Athletic Conference records, several of them, home runs, batting average, slugging, total bases, the whole nine yards. He's a veteran coach as well. Spans 13 years. He's had 48 players end up being drafted, including this past year, first-round draft choice and first-team All-American Cody Hose. He began his coaching career as an assistant at Virginia, where the Cavaliers won three ACC titles and made two College World Series appearances. He then went over to Santa Clara for a year, back to Notre Dame for a year, and then served as head coach at Lower Columbia College from 2014-17, where he led the Red Devils. Great name. Great name. To three straight West Region titles and a Northwest Athletic Conference championship in 2015 and 17. So the guy's been a head coach before, very successful. He has been able to coach and develop guys and send them to the Major League Baseball amateur draft. He's coached at a Power 5 conference before as an assistant. Oh, and he knows Paul Mineri because he played for him for 2 years at Notre Dame. Cody Schuetz, it's official now. You have your new volunteer coach and hitting coach. He does replace Sean Ochinco, who a lot of LSU fans weren't thrilled about. The averages, the home run totals all dipped under Sean the last couple years. Remember, he began his career as an undergraduate assistant back in 2017 before being promoted to volunteer coach and hitting coach. Mineri thanked Sean Ochinco, but no word on if this was a decision that Paul Mineri made or this was a decision that Sean made. We don't know about that just yet, but they do have a new man in charge. He's had a tremendous amount of success, especially how he's been able to get teams to hit the ball so well, including Tulane. Cody, do you like this hire? We talked about it a little bit when it broke a while back, but now it's official. You've had a little bit moment to maybe look over this guy's resume. Do you like this hire?
Yeah. I'd be lying if I said I knew a whole lot about this new guy, but Sean Ochinco, admittedly, at least in my eyes, wasn't even the greatest hitter when he played at LSU. And by no means do you have to be a Hall of Fame hitter to be a successful hitting coach. That's not what I'm trying to say. But, you know, when you look at the former success of LSU, it hasn't stood up, is what I'll say. In the last, 5 years, LSU at the plate really hasn't been what we're used to seeing, whether that's got more to do with the coaching or more to do with maybe the change in the bats or the change in the balls, whatever the case may be. A change, I think, was definitely necessary. So you won't find any complaints from me yet because I don't know what Eddie Smith is going to bring to the table. As I mentioned real quick yesterday, last time LSU brought in a guy from out of New Orleans, out of Tulane, to come in and be the hitting coach for the Tigers, things went really well. Really, really, really well. Maybe not for that hitting coach in particular by the end of his run as a baseball coach.
He's coaching high school again.
Yeah, there you go. That's something, I guess. But when you were the head coach of Mississippi State, now you're coaching high school ball. Something happened. But we don't have to go into that. But last time LSU went this route, it was a very, very good thing. So hopefully history can kind of repeat itself here, and we'll see some more success for the Tigers after bringing in a hitting coach from Tulane.
And they made the decision, and you have to refresh my memory because I don't really remember. They had the hitting coach in place for the trip to the College World Series. But he couldn't serve in that capacity anymore because he had to step away from coaching.
Was it because he accepted the job? I'm not.
We'll have to do the research and go back and look. So they turned to Sean to take over because he was a grad assistant essentially, and was like, okay, well, we're going to promote you. You're going to be a volunteer coach, and you're going to be the hitting coach.
And Maneri can trust him. He knows this kid.
But the average, the home runs, the extra base hits, all that has decreased. All that declined since the College World Series trip when they made the change to Sean. Now, for I know a lot of LSU fans, they look at that as well, and they're like, well, hey, this guy took over as the hitting coach. All the averages, the home run totals, all this stuff went down, and that just so happens to coincide with us not getting back to the College World Series. Okay? I don't think Sean is responsible for that because at the end of the day, the players have to be the ones to make the plays. The coaches can prepare you, they can train you, they can teach you, they can educate you, but at the end of the day, the player has to be the one out there to make the play. And that's always how I felt about that. But I also find it interesting that Maneri at the end of the season said that he wasn't planning on making any changes to his staff. Yet here we are in July, and there's been a change made. So is this, once again, we'll find out later. It'll take a little while, but we'll find out later on who made this change. Was this simply Sean stepping away and going, you know what, this is, you know, I don't want to be a collegiate coach anymore. I don't want to be a coach here at LSU anymore. I want to go in to do something else. The likelihood of that, as Cody just gave me what we call the side eye.
Are you going to sell me up the river like that? I like Sean Ochinco.
The side eye. You gave me the look. You're like, my man. You gave me the look like, bro, are you really saying that? You know good and well homeboy was made to say, we're going in a different direction. Thanks for your service. I was trying to be more diplomatic about it. And look, nothing against Sean, but obviously a change needed to be made, right? And there's other factors, too. When you have a hitting coach and you have your sluggers struggle as LSU what? Right, Daniel Cabrera had an off year. Right, Cody? I mean, he had a sophomore slump. Duplantis had a very good year. His home run totals went up, but Zach Watson had struggles this year. And the younger guys that we thought were going to come in and just light it up did not, right? The freshmen that came in did not. So you have to have a guy that's going to get the most out of your hitters and is going to be able to notice and recognize when one of your hitters is going into a slump and is struggling, and to address it and fix it immediately, right? That's what the best hitting coaches at the collegiate level do. They notice a trend. They notice a guy after a couple games, something's wrong. Maybe his stance is off. Maybe his foot placement is not where it needs to be. Maybe he's holding his elbow further down in the back of his stance when he shouldn't be. Maybe the swing is not right. You know, something. The best hitting coaches address the issues and immediately work to fix it. That way you don't have your players go in season-long slumps. We saw multiple players for LSU just this year do just that. So maybe a change of pace, maybe a guy who has coached All-Americans, has coached a lot of draft picks, a guy that's been a head coach, a former player himself, can come in and give LSU that spark and work with those younger guys, those guys that were freshmen this past year, that did not flourish like we expected them to. Maybe you can get Daniel Cabrera back on track. Now, that's not to say that the Tigers didn't have good hitters last year. Cade Beloso, he was a nice surprise, right? And Zach Watson turned it around towards the end of the season. Of course, Duplantis had an all-SEC caliber season. But when you're at LSU, you need more than like four guys to be good hitters. You need 8. That's the expectation, especially if they want to get back to the College World Series. So I think it's a slam dunk kind of hire there. He's familiar with Maneri. He's already familiar with the state because here's the other thing. He was the recruiting coordinator for Tulane too. So he already knows the high schools, right? He already knows the landscape in Louisiana and where the best players are. And now that he's going to be at LSU, Cody, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be a little bit easier for him to get guys to sign on the dotted line to come play college baseball at LSU than it was, say, at Tulane. That's just my thought process. Academic requirements and everything involved. Plus, you know, it's LSU. Not knocking Tulane. Got nothing but love for the Green Wave. The big difference between LSU and Tulane when it comes to college baseball. Just saying. Just saying. So, but that wasn't the only baseball news that came out yesterday concerning the LSU program. The Tigers, head coach Paul Maneri, have added some infield competition. We'll talk about that. Just exactly who the Tigers have scooped up and added to their roster after this break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. I'm Raymond Parts III, a.k.a. RP3, and you're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We've been talking baseball heavy all show, as expected. Major League Baseball All-Star Game was last night. American League defeats the National League 4-3. The Houston Astros, three players, in the field players, everyday players as we like to call them, all got hits. Bregman, Brantley, and Springer. Verlander pitched a nearly perfect first inning, striking out two, as the Astros helped the American League win their seventh straight Midsummer Classic. We also talked about, are the balls being juiced? It's a good question. No one has a good answer. Hopefully, I will be able to come up with a good answer for you in the near future. I'd actually bank on Cody providing a better answer than me. He has insider information.
Rob Manfred says no.
Rob Manfred does say no. He also says we'll be the first to know, not the players or the coaches.
Right. Us.
Us. Oh, you'll be the first to know. Don't believe you.
When he said that, he was talking to MLB Sirius XM Radio's network, so maybe he means them specifically. Like, he's not going to tell just any media, but Sirius XM MLB Radio specifically.
You don't know. We could get an email blast. Hey, 103.7 The Game, Rob Manfred would like to tell you something.
Rob Manfred tweets out, yeah, we're juicing the balls. No.
Get over it.
But when a guy...
Go ahead.
I just have a question. When a guy on the level of Justin Verlander makes a claim like this, yeah, exactly. That's my point. This isn't... And I can't even think of a mid-level guy right now. This isn't a Tommy La Stella making this claim that this is Justin Verlander. This is that dude on one of those teams this claim. So I don't. That's why it carries a little water right now.
Former Cy Young Award winner, former league MVP,
All-Star game starter.
All-Star game starter. Guy's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, more than likely. Yeah. And look, the pitchers have been noticing this. And they've been noticing, going, I've been throwing the same pitch, and all of a sudden now it's not doing what it should be doing. So, you heard, you know, other reports like from Charlie Morton say, all of a sudden the ball doesn't sink like it used to. Why? That's curious. We also discussed LSU baseball making it official, getting themselves a new hitting coach, volunteer coach, and Eddie Smith, who spent the last two seasons at Tulane. He also played for Paul Maneri at Notre Dame. He's also been a head coach, a very successful one, at the junior college level. So we'll see if that makes an impact and helps improve the hitting for the Tigers, which has been a little bit of a lull the last couple of seasons since they reached the College World Series. But the addition to the coaching staff wasn't the only news that came out concerning LSU baseball yesterday. James Moran, our good buddy at Tiger Rag, broke the news that LSU signed not one but two Zachs to bolster the infield competition. As if we didn't. It's as if they made the decision, you know what, we're losing two Zachs, Zach Watson, Zach Hess, but we need two Zachs. It's as if Paul Maneri's like, I need to have two Zachs on my roster. LSU has signed Zach Arnold and Zach Mathis. Zach Arnold spelled Z-A-C-H. Zach Mathis spelled Z-A-C-K. After LSU lost Reese Hines and Christian Cario to the Major League Baseball draft, Paul Maneri and Nolan Cain set out to scour the country, in Maneri's words, and search two players who could help bolster the infield for the 2020 season. That search has netted two signees. Both played the infield. Zach Arnold and Zach Mathis have signed with LSU, Maneri told Tiger Rag on Tuesday afternoon. Both players were previously signed with other schools, but were granted releases from their national letters of intent after their respective coaches were let go. Maneri said, quote, "We went out and scouted the country, and we found two really good players. In all honesty, after Christian Cario decided to sign, we decided that we really needed to sign two infielders, so that's what we ended up doing," end quote. Arnold is from California. He had originally signed to play for Oregon out of the Pac-12. That changed when the school and former coach George Horton mutually agreed to part ways following the 2019 season. He was drafted in the 34th round of the Major League Baseball amateur draft by the Baltimore Orioles. That's a wise decision by him. I would not want to go play for the Baltimore Orioles either. Mathis, meanwhile, played last season at San Juan Delta College, a JUCO in California, and was originally signed to play for Cal State Northridge. Mathis himself was a 38th round draft pick of the Minnesota Twins, and he hit .351 with 10 home runs and 66 RBIs during his sophomore season there for the junior college. Those two will now join freshman Cade Doty and a group of returning infielders, which should be a wide-open competition, Moran writes, for playing time this fall. That group includes Hal Hughes, Gavin Dugas, and Drew Bianco. Cody, we've talked about on this show Bianco, Dugas, and Hughes underperforming at the plate. Okay? They did not set the world on fire at the plate this past season for the Tigers, and that we would need to see more from them, especially with the losses, including Josh Smith leaving the Tigers infield. Now, we'll know they'll be set at first base. More than likely, it'll be Beloso if Beloso doesn't play DH. But the middle of the infield. So you got these three guys coming back, Hughes, Dugas, Bianco. You bring in the freshman, Doty, and now you got these two guys, one from a JUCO and another one who originally signed from Oregon. You like this, right? You like this competition that they're going to have going into fall camp.
Absolutely. I mean, iron sharpens iron. And I mean, it's a saying, but it means something. The more guys you bring in, the more competition you have, the better success that should breed.
And if I'm Maneri, I love this too, because this also challenges Hughes, Dugas, and Bianco, right? It lets them know, hey guys, we love you. We hope you turn into something, but you got to step your game up. You can't perform like you did last year. We're bringing in guys to push you, to make you better. And if you're not good enough, then you're not going to get on the field. So the right move by a nationally ranked program, perennial powerhouse LSU. That's going to do it for hour number one here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break. More sports talk coming up next here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
I mean, I try to hit the ball up in the air in the cage.
Somebody go get that. That's in the gap.
Done!
Acuna going to get it. He'll get it back in. Here comes Bregman. Throw home by Almago is too late. And the AL jumps on top. 1-0.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air sports coverage. You can also find us LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Major League Baseball All-Star Game was last night, and the Houston Astros, your Houston Astros, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game, helped the AL defeat the National League 4-3. It's the seventh straight win by the American League over the Senior League in 11 out of the last 14 years. It's a run of dominance that the American League has displayed over the National League. So much so that the American League now leads the all-time series over the National League. Once again, I love that clip. Alex Bregman, former LSU star, Houston Astro star, and all-star starter, gets driven in by his teammate, Michael Brantley, who spent the better part of a decade playing for the Cleveland Indians. They parted ways with him. He had been banged up a little bit with some injuries the last few seasons. He signs with the Astros on a two-year deal, maybe the steal of free agency. He's been an absolute monster for the Astros, who have dealt with their own injuries. He has stepped up. He's become one of the best hitters on the team. He was a starter as well in the outfield for the American League, joined by his teammate George Springer. All the Astros position players got hits. Brantley drives in Bregman there, as you heard on the call. I absolutely love the fact that Joe Buck was trying to talk to two guys that were playing in the outfield. And then a hit goes into the outfield. I just love that. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
Somebody yells, dive. You legit, like, he's like, dive.
Oh, that is outstanding. Just
try to hit the ball up in the air in the cage.
Somebody go get that. That's in the gap.
Dive.
I hear it now.
And now you hear Joe Buck. Somebody go get that. That's not his call of the hit. That is him talking directly to
the outfielder. He's talking to two players. Talking to one of them. Go get that. Hey, now, stop talking to me. I'm Joe Buck.
I'm with you on that. I don't mind that at all. In the All-Star game, obviously.
Yes, in the All-Star game.
Right, because they do that celebrity softball game, right, during the All-Star, where Kevin Hart usually does something ridiculous.
Right, the celebrity game, yeah.
Right, and they're always mic'd up and saying ridiculous things. I can get behind that for the All-Star game, especially when, you know, you got something like that happening where someone's yelling, dive, for the ball as we're talking to them. It's great.
Yes. Once again, the American League's first three hits of the night all came on the bats of Houston Astro players, Springer, Bregman, and Brantley. For the game, Springer went 1-for-2 with a single. Bregman went 1-for-2 with a single, and he scored that run. Michael Brantley was 1-for-1 with a double and an RBI. And Justin Verlander, who got the start on the bump, one inning, zero hits, two strikeouts. So, I mean, that's a hell of a all-star game for the Houston Astros. Ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what you want to do. You want to be the first three players to get hits for the American League are all from the same team. Let that wash over you just for a second. 4-3 victory. Did their part, which is exactly what you would hope. I'd have liked to seen, you know, I know they have to get a lot of guys in there and get them playing time. I would have liked to see Brantley have another at-bat. That would have been nice, but I get it. You want to try to get as many guys in there as possible and give them as many reps as possible. Because, look, I mean, that's the other thing. If you're one of these managers for the All-Star game, you're trying to get all the guys playing time. It doesn't happen because there's so many guys on there. But a lot of these cats, this is going to be their only time maybe being an All-Star. Or this may be their first time. So you want to try to at least get them in the field or at least get them one AB. But I would have liked to seen Brantley get another at-bat. Former LSU Tiger DJ LeMahieu started in the infield as well with Alex Bregman for the American League team. He started at second base, the Yankee star. He went 0 for 2 at the plate. So he was unable to record a hit. Gerrit Cole and Ryan Pressly were the other two guys for the Astros. They did not pitch. The American League used 9 pitchers, but Gerrit Cole and Pressly did not get into the game. I'm not for sure if they were a late scratch or not, but they did not get into the game. But Astros had themselves a heck of a night at the ballpark there at Progressive Field for the Midsummer Classic. Thoughts, though, 7 straight. 7 straight wins for the American League. Thankfully, the World Series is no longer determined. The home field advantage for the World Series is no longer determined by who wins the All-Star game, which was the epitome of stupidity. An All-Star game featuring a bunch of guys that don't play for the same team, determining who gets home field advantage was moronic at best. Just let it be an All-Star game. It doesn't have to affect the postseason. Why would you take a game that is meaningless and it's just a bunch of guys hanging out and taking pictures and having fun and talking to Joe Buck while they're actually playing the game in the outfield and have that determine who has home field advantage for the most important week and a half of your season? Does it seem like that would make, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Somehow that was a thing, ladies and gentlemen, and the All-Star game was determining who won home field advantage, who earned home field advantage for the World Series. So thankfully we're past that nonsense. Also coming out yesterday through Major League Baseball, you're Shane Bieber. I say he's no relation to Justin. I could be wrong. I don't know. We'll get our research staff right on top of that for you. He pitched a perfect inning, striking out 3 in 1 innings of work. He was named MVP. But the bigger news coming out yesterday for me that kind of even dominated the game was Verlander. You know, Verlander came out on Monday, made his announcement, you know, said that he believes that the balls are juice and that's something. He doesn't believe that it's just a coincidence that when Major League Baseball, which owns the ball company, Rawlings, that produces the balls for Major League Baseball, that he doesn't believe that it's a coincidence that all of a sudden that now these balls are just leaving the ballpark at a record pace. And there's other pitchers out there that support Verlander's claim. And as Cody pointed out in the last hour, it holds a little bit more weight when Verlander says it, because this is a guy who's a World Series champion. This is a guy who's been a league MVP and Cy Young Award winner. He's one of the most respected and dominant pitchers of his era, more than likely going to end up being a first ballot Hall of Famer. Oh, and he married Kate Upton. So when Verlander speaks, it means something. And when he's coming out and saying this, and instead of a middle reliever for the Toronto Blue Jays, it holds some weight. Now, of course, as we heard, Manfred denies this. He denies that there's been anything doing. And if there is going to be a change to the ball, we'll be the first in it. Cody and I are on that list. We'll be on that email blast. Something's different. Something's different. Have they changed the technology in the ball? Have they changed the baseball itself? Is it their way of juicing? Is it baseball's way of returning to the era where home runs left the ballpark at a record pace and we had guys built like the Incredible Hulk playing baseball? Is it this way of kind of doing that? Of not having pitchers dominate as much, guys like Verlander, Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, and the likes. you did hear some grumblings over the last few years, starting about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. Oh, the game's getting a little boring. There's not as many home runs. The pitchers are dominating. Where's all the hitters at? Would you be surprised if Major League Baseball decided to change the baseball to make it easier for it to fly out of ballparks? Once again, Major League Baseball owns the baseball company that makes the baseballs for its league. Would you be surprised? I don't think I would be. Now, I'm cynical. I've lived through a couple of work stoppages for baseball. I've lived through the steroids era. Grew up before it, lived through it. So I'm a little bit more cynical. It would not surprise me at all if there was some minor changes being made. It also wouldn't surprise me if this is just a different mindset by the modern hitters. We've had numerous big guys, including Alex Bregman. Actually, just this week, talk about his change, what his philosophy is, what his mindset is about hitting. He basically came out and said that he could be a 330 hitter, but that's not what the game asked for. That's not how the game is played now. It's all about extra base hits and home runs. So he's tailored his game towards that. This is a young star. This is a guy who was the All-Star Game MVP last year. This is a guy who's already won a World Series. He's one of the younger, fresh faces of the game. And he's telling you he's tailored his game to adapt to what is expected and to how games are being played and how games are being managed in 2019. My gut tells me it's probably a little bit of both. That the balls have probably been altered slightly, and that hitters do not care about striking out anymore. They do not care about hitting 300 anymore. They don't care about getting on. It's all about extra base hits and home runs. And I think they've changed how they approach the game, and they've changed their mindset when they get in the batting cage to prepare for the games. And you're seeing that as a direct result. But I think it's a combination of both. We got to hit a break. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We didn't get a chance to get to it yesterday. It broke after our show, but a local coaching legend and a state high school Hall of Famer passed away, James Wagspack. He was the former St. James, Cecilia, and Beauchan football coach who compiled more than 200 wins in a 32-year head coaching career, where he also won two state championships, including one at St. James and one at Cecilia. He died Monday afternoon after suffering a stroke on Sunday evening. He was 76 years old. Wagspack's wife of 36 years, Monica, confirmed the news to James Brewers of the Acadiana Advocate. At the time of his passing, he was surrounded by his wife and his five children, and he died peacefully at Our Lady Lourdes Regional Medical Center in Lafayette. James was inducted into the Louisiana High School Sports Hall of Fame in April, and he's among the coaching titans in Louisiana high school football history. He coached for 46 years. He retired in 2012.
That's longer than you've been alive.
That's correct.
Like, we usually make that joke on me, yeah. But that's longer than you've been alive, man. Good.
His 231 career wins ranks in the top 30 all-time among state high school coaches. He was named District Coach of the Year 10 times. He's also the only Louisiana coach to have ever led two different teams to undefeated championship seasons. The first came in 1979 with St. James, his alma mater, which earned him State Coach of the Year honors. The next one came in 1995 with Cecilia. That is the Bulldogs' only state football title. 20 years before his first state title as a head coach, Waxback claimed a ring as a player with the St. James Wildcats. In between that, St. James won another championship in 1966 while he was an assistant coach. So he won one as a player, won one as an assistant coach, and then won one as a head coach there at St. James. The first of two visitations for Waxback is scheduled for Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. at Pelleran Funeral Home there in Cecilia. It will include a rosary at 6 p.m. On Saturday, visitation will continue from 8 to 11 a.m. at St. Philip Catholic Church. Waxbacks will be laid to rest immediately after that at St. Philip Catholic Church Cemetery. An absolute coaching legend. Had all that great success at St. James, was able to carry that over to Cecilia, bringing that program, one of the best programs in Acadiana, its lone state championship there in 1995. And after that, he helped bring some legitimacy to Beauchamp, a school that was not created until the late 80s, early 90s, due to consolidation, and then helped bring some respect to them. Waxback, once again, was only 76 years old. Once again, 32 years as a head coach, St. James, Cecilia, and Beauchamp. Some local reaction, courtesy of our friend Eric Narcisse of the Daily Advertiser, for his story that you can find on theadvertiser.com. Quote, Coach Wags always saw something in people before they ever saw it in themselves. He got me to go out for football in the spring of 2002 before he left for Beauchamp. He gave me my first head coaching job when he hired me as the head boys basketball coach at Beauchamp. He saw something in me. He's a big part of who I am to this day. I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for him because he opened up a lot of doors for me, end quote. That is Lorenzo Williams, the head boys and girls basketball coach at Opelousas High. Jamaica D'Artes, one of the best running backs of all time in the state's history, former Cecilia and Tulane star, was heartbroken after hearing the news of his former coach's death. Quote, I was in denial, you know, when Pee-wee called to tell me. I was just shocked and in disbelief. I didn't want to believe it. Coach Wags was a father figure to everyone. I'm blessed to have crossed paths with him, end quote. Two state championships, 231 wins. And he was inducted into the Louisiana High School Athletic Association's Hall of Fame in April. More local reaction. LCA boys basketball coach Errol Rogers Sr. said, quote, I've always had a lot of respect for Wags. He was a very good coach and a good person, end quote. So another Acadiana legend, legendary coach, has passed away suddenly. You will continue seeing more former players remember him, including his good friend, Loyal Pee-wee Guidry. They met in college at what was then, guess what, USL. Of course, in the early 60s, and they became fast friends and remained lifelong friends after that. Quote, Guidry said, it was the first time in a long time that we didn't get together for dinner at one of our houses. It had been years since we didn't eat together on a Friday. It was a priority for both of us. It was hard not to go to his house. That's Guidry talking about how the two lifelong friends did not dine at Wagpaig's home as scheduled due to Guidry having a prior commitment. They always get together to have dinners every Friday. And this past Friday, Pee-wee couldn't do it. A few days later, his lifelong friend, one of his best friends, passed away. Once again, Katie Anna, coaching legend, has passed away. James Wagpaig. Our prayers and our thoughts will be going out to his family throughout all of Acadiana and to Cecilia, James, St. James, and Beauchamp High Schools. We have to hit a break. More RP3 and Company are coming up after this, right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell Simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. The New Orleans Saints officially released their 2019 training camp schedule yesterday. And we got good things to talk about, Cody. It's official now, training camp schedule. There will be 12 practices, Houdat Nation, that will be open to the public at the team's practice facility in lovely Metairie. In addition to those practices, the team will also have an open session at Tulane University on Sunday, August the 4th at 7 p.m., along with a Black and Gold Fan Fest from 5 to 6:30 p.m. that same day. Also, the Saints, Mickey Loomis, Gail Benson, they want to do a better job of taking care of you. All of you Houdat fans out there, including you, Cody Schutz. I got off the phone with them. I talked to them myself. This year's training camp comes with an upgrade for fans, as all bleacher seating will now be covered and misted. Oh, yeah. So not only do you get coverage from the blistering sun, because I went down for training camp last year, it was brutal. People were like, Raymond, did you run through a water hose? No, I didn't go through a sprinkler system. I just was outside for training camp for an hour. And my body said, I hate you. And the bleachers that they have set up around the practice field are not covered, or haven't been. Well, that's going to be different. Not only are all bleacher seats going to be now covered, there will also be misted to help cool you off, which allows more shade and help you beat the heat. The sessions, just like last year, are free to attend, but Saints fans, you do need to reserve tickets by registering on the team's website, okay? So if you want tickets, go check out the free training camp sessions. There'll be 12 practices, once again, open to the public at the team's practice facility in Metairie. You need to go to the team's website and reserve your tickets. Season ticket holders, meanwhile, can get theirs as early as next week, starting July 16th, with waiting list members able to get theirs the following day on July 17th, and then the general public on July 18th. So mark those on your calendar. The practices are open to the public are as follows. Starting Friday, July 26th, that will be here soon, guys, right around the corner. Then on that Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, so from July 26th through July 30th, 5 days in a row, you can catch training camp practice. To take a few days off, you can start watching them again on Friday, August the 2nd, Saturday, August the 3rd. Sunday, August the 4th, of course, is the special start time. That's the game at Tulane University. That'll also be part of Fan Fest. They'll take another couple days off, and then it's August the 7th, Wednesday, August the 7th, and then Saturday, Sunday, Monday, August 10th through the 12th, and then the last one, Thursday, August the 22nd. If you're out on the West Coast, Saints fans, I don't know, you may be traveling for work or for vacation. The Saints will be having some joint practices with the Los Angeles Chargers on August 15th and 16th. They're in Costa Mesa, California. So, training camp schedule is now out there, established. You know what practices you can go attend. You know when the Black and Gold Fan Fest is. Once again, Black and Gold Fan Fest will be from 5 to 6:30 on August the 4th. And that will lead up to the special open practice session held at Tulane University. That will begin at 7 p.m. So you can check out Fan Fest, and then you can mosey over to Yeoman Stadium to check out Saints practice at Tulane University. Once again, tickets are free for the 12 open training camp sessions to the public. The only thing you have to do is go on the team's website and request your tickets. Once again, season ticket holders can do that on July 16th. Waiting list members can do that on July 17th. And then general public can do so on July 18th. Cody, now that you know the schedule, are we going to be making a road trip to Metairie sometime in August?
Yeah, I've never done that before. So that
You've never been to the training camp.
So that could be, I know people that have gone. A buddy of mine went a couple of years ago, and he met Sheldon Rankins.
Nice.
And he met a couple of guys, defensive players. That was the crew that hung out with the crowd or the fans after the practice or whatever. But I've never been. I would be very interested in going check it out, especially now after going to watch LSU spring game in person and getting to see how all that goes down. I would like to see a spring training session.
We can make it a twofer. Hear me out. You ready? Not only can we go check out training camp as a fan, hey, the bleachers are now covered and we have mist, which is good for me. Okay, which is good for me. You're a little bit smaller and far better in shape than I, so it won't affect you as much.
Okay.
But, you know, we can check out training camp, but you know what we can also do? We can simply walk right next door, go check out the baby cakes. It's right. They're right next door. The Shrine on Airline.
Right.
Shares parking with the Pelicans training facility and the Saints training facility.
The Ochsner Medical Saints and Pelicans training facility.
Nice.
My man got the sponsorship in there.
They paid
their $1 billion to get that name on the building.
I did that last year.
Are the baby cakes, this is their last season then?
This is their last season in this, yes.
This is their
last. There's talk of somehow getting another minor league team here. Maybe it's only double A or single A.
That's got to happen. It's almost like a turnkey minor league baseball team. You know what I mean?
Right.
A franchise can come in and it almost really is turnkey. Just change the signs.
You know what they need, though? And we've mentioned it. Someone mentioned it on the air on our show. They need Gail Benson to step in and say, you know what? I'm buying the Shrine on Airline. I'm going to put improvements into it because it does need some improvements. I love the place. And I love seeing games there.
It's just a big concrete building. That's the difference.
Right.
When you go there and you look at it, it's impressive in its size. It is a big stadium.
When it was built for that era, you're like, hey, this is top of the line. But the game has changed, right? It's all about the amenities. It's all about getting people, entertaining them at the ballpark. It needs some upgrades.
It does not have a modern look.
Correct.
It's like the Superdome from the outside in that sense. On the inside, the Superdome has been plenty upgraded, but from the outside, it does not look modern.
So what you could do is have Gail say, hey, since it's right next door and they share parking, when you go cover as a member of the media, and this is what I did last year, I went as a member of the media to cover Fan Fest, and then I stuck around for the training camp session. So I covered Fan Fest. And then I stuck around for training camp session that day, okay? And the training camp session was right after Fan Fest. Did that, and I think the night before is, I forget when it was. We did Fan Fest, I think we went down, saw the baby cakes the night before, spent the night, and then the next day we went out and went to Fan Fest the next day. My buddy had came in from diehard Saints fan from Evangeline Parish, Bayou Chico. And he now lives in Indiana, so we took him to training camp. He a huge deal for him, obviously. But you park. Like, to attend training camp, you park at the Baby Cake Stadium, at the Shrine on Airline. And then you walk over, or they shuttle you over to go to the training facility. So
that's a piece of a walk.
It wasn't too. I survived.
Okay.
But you know, the future of what's going to happen there for the Shrine on Airline, you have high school teams that play there, obviously. But you need something else. Why not have minor league baseball there? Get a single A or double A team or something going. Because, look, I know people hate the name, the Baby Cakes. People love the old name, which was the Zephyrs. But I think the market, you could have a team there, but you're going to need someone that's going to invest money into the Shrine on Airline and is going to invest money in having a team there and be able to promote it and everything like that. Who better than Gail Benson? She's running the Saints nearly perfectly. She's now committed to running the Pelicans and is changing the fortunes of that franchise now that she owns. Hey, there's the ballpark. Let's try to keep baseball in New Orleans because it does have a rich tradition of baseball. We got a little sidetracked there. I got a little excited about the road trip.
You could have Benson Tower right in the middle there of New Orleans. You can't miss it. And then you could have the Benson Compound out in Metairie. When you add together the Saints, Pelicans, and the Shrine on Airline facilities there.
Why not?
I'm down.
Just take it over. So we'll have to look at the schedule. Possible road trip in our future for RP3.
We definitely, regardless if we do need to make some sort of training camp practice, but even if we don't make that a Baby Cakes game in the final season.
Their final season of the Baby Cakes.
Got to be on the list.
I got to get the Angry Baby hat. I went last year, didn't get it.
I have a shirt. Have you seen the shirt?
I have seen the shirt. I'm jealous of you. I'm jealous of you.
I never got a hat. I should get a Baby Cakes hat. I want a dad hat, though. You know, the floppy hats. I want one of those with the Baby Cakes logo on it.
Oh, I love that, the dad hat. I love that. I love that. But, yes, New Orleans Saints have released their training camp schedule. Once again, 12 practice sessions will be open to the public at the team's practice facility in Metairie. There's the Black and Gold Fan Fest, which will be on Sunday, August the 4th from 5 to 6:30. And then the special game, the special practice session being held at Tulane University at Yulman Stadium on Sunday, August the 4th, starting at 7 p.m. For more information, check out the Saints website. Also, if you'd like to get tickets, once again, season ticket holders, you can start reserving your free tickets to the open sessions July 16th, waiting list members July 17th, and then general public like you and I and Cody on July 18th. We got to hit a break. But when we come back, we will wrap up hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. That was Zion Williamson, number one overall pick in the NBA draft. Pelicans star, even though he's a rookie. He was giving love to his fellow first-round draft pick, lottery pick, Jackson Hayes. Because, you know, Jackson, he had that monster, filthy dunk. You know it's good.
My God, he killed him. He's broken in half.
My favorite is the guy who took the Jim Ross clip and put it over the, and that's what I shared with Cody, and that's what we played the other day. I was very happy.
Appropriate.
The Jackson Hayes dunk from the Summer League game. Zion, his Summer League action was brief, only 9 minutes back on Friday. He had a sensational dunk of his own after he ripped the ball from poor Kevin Knox's hands, just took it away from him, just like stole like his lunch money, and then took the ball and slammed it home. But he's been sat out for the rest of the Summer League. That's a decision made by David Griffin, Vice President of Basketball Operations for the Pelicans, due to the contact of knee to knee, which is no damage, nothing like that. He's not even really injured, but they're just going to shut him down. Why jeopardize your season by having Zion Williamson play a bunch of minutes in the Summer League? But Zion was asked, you know, what is he going to do now? How is he going to kill time if he's not playing in the Summer League for the Pels?
Just hone my craft and get ready for the season.
I like that. My man was ready for the answer, right? He was ready. I'm going to hone my craft. Because, you know, David Griffin said the other day when they made the announcement that Zion was going to be shut down, in that statement, he was quoted as saying that they'll have Zion working on his conditioning. Once again, Zion's a big fella. Okay? If he doesn't maintain the diet, doesn't maintain the working out, he's going to be looking like me. It happens quickly. Okay? So he's going to be focused in on that, honing his craft. He did admit, though, the young man, only 19 years old, former Duke star, did say, you know, it's a little frustrating not being able to be out there.
It's very frustrating because you know me, I'm a competitor, and whenever I can play, I just want to play.
He's a competitor. He just wants to be out there playing. Zion is a phenomenal talent, but he's still raw, right? We saw that at Duke. The kid can take over a game. Once again, he's got like parts Shaq, parts Charles Barkley, parts Sean Kemp. There's a lot of different players that you can look at in the past from the legendary eras of the association and go, well, that's Zion's got part of his game, and Zion's got part of this game. Zion's got to work on things, though. He's got to make sure to keep his body in check. He's got to stay in shape. Okay? That's something Charles struggled with throughout his career. That's definitely something Shaq struggled with throughout his career, especially later on. Okay? He's got to make sure to get the weight down. He's got to make sure to be better conditioned. This isn't playing in the ACC. This is playing in the NBA. Big difference. All these cats that play in the NBA, even the guys that are part of the second team coming off the bench, were stars in college. These are some of the best conditioned, athletic freaks of nature on the face of the planet playing basketball. Okay? He's not going to just be able to come in and push over guys. So Zion's going to have to work on being conditioned. He's going to have to be one of the best conditioned guys on the team. Now, there's other guys on this team, the roster that they've built around Zion, that are workout guys that are going to be on top of him. Jrue Holiday will be one. Jrue will set the tone. He's the leader of this team. Derek Favors is a guy who's in good shape, the guy that they traded for from the Utah Jazz. Okay? There's some mentors there, guys that are really good guys that take being in shape to another level, J.J. Redick being another one. You don't play as long as J.J. has if you're not in shape. But Zion said that he's a little curious to see how it all kind of pans out.
I think we have so much young talent with older talent. So, you know, I'm curious just like on you with how it's going to work and how well we're going to play together.
He's not the only one that's curious. Don't be surprised if this is a playoff team. Maybe like a 7-seed, 8-seed team. Now, they could overachieve because of the vets that they brought in, but you're going to have Lonzo Ball starting at the 1, Jrue at the 2, Ingram, Zion, and then Derek Favors. And then you're going to have a bench that's going to include the likes of Frank Jackson, Josh Hart, J.J. Redick. Okay. Jackson Hayes won't even be a starter. He'll be coming off the bench. They're going to slowly develop him despite the monstrous dunk that resulted in people on Twitter doing the death skull emojis. Right? I'm hip. I know what all that lingo is. No, I do not. So they have quality depth. They have some veteran leadership. So we'll be interested to see if Alvin Gentry can get everyone to be on the same page. He's got very good pieces. He's got a young team, though. Most of the guys are under the age of 24. He's got some vets. That leadership will need to be, they'll have to depend on that. But Zion did get a taste of what it was like to be in the NBA, even though it was brief, only 9 minutes. It was the highest rated Summer League game in history, highest attended Summer League game in history as well out there in Vegas. And that's what Zion had to say about his experience last Friday.
It was a crazy experience because the gym was sold out. I didn't expect that many people to be there. The energy was high, and it was my first taste of like actually playing against NBA players, so it was great.
It was great. It was electric, and then an earthquake happened. So that'll be a memorable night for everyone involved. Get to see Zion Williamson. Get to see Zion Williamson absolutely destroy Kevin Knox, and then there was an earthquake, and the game was never finished, never completed. That's a hell of a way to start off a weekend in Vegas. I've had a weekend like that. Not with the earthquake, though. I've had a good weekend in Vegas, though. But that's a discussion off there. Hour number 2 is in the books. Coming up, hour number 3, Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com, joins us to lead things off. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parts III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidified everybody seeing that LSU's for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You also go find us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We spent a good portion of today's show talking about Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Are the balls juiced, as Justin Verlander has indicated? We've also talked about New Orleans Saints training camp schedule and some Pels. We also touched on LSU baseball, and I want to talk a little bit about that, further discuss that, as well as help us preview SEC Media Days, which will be next week, with our next guest. He is the award-winning journalist from TigerDetails.com. It's our good friend, the one and only, Ron Higgins. Ron, how you doing this morning, brother?
Good morning, Raymond. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. We'll get to Hoover and the insanity that is that, because I'll be going next week, and I need you to help brace me for what's going to be happening there, because I hear it's absolutely crazy. We'll get to that, Ron, but I want to talk the news that broke yesterday about concerning LSU baseball. It was finally official, the addition to the staff, the new hitting coach and volunteer coach, the young man from Tulane who previously played for Paul Menary at Notre Dame. He replaces Sean Ochinco as the hitting coach and volunteer coach. What do you make of the move?
Well, you know, I mean, Paul Menary kind of hinted at it at his end-of-the-season press conference he had a couple days after the season ended, and we talked about it, you know, the LSU's hitting. LSU hit just 273 last year, and that's their lowest batting average since Paul became coach in 2007. You know, their strikeouts increased this past year. And Paul talked about his, you know, LSU's approach to the plate, the ability to handle all speed pitches and the curveballs and changeups gave them getting problems. And two strikes on the batter, they need to be hit opposite field more instead of swinging for the fences. So there's some things he thought needed to be corrected. He made a switch, and obviously he felt he had to at this point. We've got a guy who has got a great resume. I mean, people are looking at Penny Smith as a guy who say we coached for Tulane, but you go past that. One, he played for Paul at Notre Dame. But then he was a head coach in a small college in Washington. He coached for Virginia, Notre Dame, Santa Clara. I mean, he coached some good, great places. So this is a – I think it's a steal. I mean, I really do. I mean, I think this is a guy with a lot of experience, and I think he'll have an impact.
We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, you know, Sean was kind of thrust into that role. He was essentially a grad assistant, and he became the volunteer coach and the hitting coach. And in 2 years, they underperformed at the plate. You talked about, you know, the record number of the low batting average, the strikeouts. Daniel Cabrera had a bit of a sophomore slump. Those freshmen really didn't come in and contribute like we thought they would. Was it just a bad fit with Sean? Was he just maybe in over his head? What is your opinion?
Well, you know, I mean, I just think, I was a bad fit, but he wasn't giving Paul what he thought they needed. And he was forcing kind of into it. I think he did the best he could. But in this day and age, you can't hit 270-something and expect to, you know, go far in the tournament. I mean, I still think the fact that with all the pitching injuries they had and hitting 270-something, the fact they got to a Super Regional is kind of amazing. I know a lot of LSU fans don't feel that way, but I'm sorry. It's pretty amazing when you've had a pitcher after pitcher get hurt, and then you have this hitting, was not very good. It's still pretty amazing they got to the Super Regional. And I think Paul didn't, he doesn't want to have to kind of struggle that hard to get back to the Super Regional or get to a World Series. I mean, yeah, so I think he knows when it's time, you know, things be changed, and he's changing up the hitting. And he got a guy he knew he's comfortable with. And I know LSU fans will say, well, he hired some of his players. Well, this guy is not just none of his players. I mean, look at his resume. He's not just none of his players. This guy's got plenty of coaching experience and really good situations. And I think it's a huge get for LSU.
I'm talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We'll keep the baseball talk going forward here, Ron. It was announced yesterday, it broke yesterday, that they have added not one but two infielders, a JUCO transfer, and then another guy who had originally committed to Oregon but was released out of his national letter of intent due to a coaching change. To me, that says that serves as a warning shot to the three freshmen that really didn't step up in the infield for the Tigers this year to kind of, hey, you need to step up and improve your game, or if not, you'll be riding the pine. What did you make of adding two infielders here in July?
I think you're exactly right with your assessment. It's a warning shot to the LSU freshmen last year who weren't very good. I mean, they just didn't produce like they should have. Now, I mean, I can tell you, I mean, there's some freshmen on that team last year who weren't very good. I mean, I think, you know, DiGiacomo is going to be great in the outfield. I mean, I think he's a star in the making. But there's other guys, like you said. I mean, Drew Bianco, didn't have a great year, kind of, you know, up and down, tailed off. You're hoping Gavin Dugas comes along. I don't know if he got a lot of a chance last year. But they do need, you know, they're losing some people on the infield. They need some depth. I mean, obviously, they're looking for a new shortstop. That's a huge key for them. So they've got to go find some people. And I don't blame them. I mean, they got to replace Brant Broussard. They got some people to replace, and they need some immediate help, some experience help. And I think, he went and found some guys who they believe that can help right away, because there's not much time for a learning curve at this point, really. Either you're really good when you step in as a freshman, or you better get with the program by your sophomore year. But still, as a freshman, if you come in as a highly touted freshman, you're expected to play and produce. And they've had people like that. But last year, just the only freshman I thought really produced consistently when he was in the lineup was DiGiacomo, as far as a position player. And they had some pitchers who were freshmen who were, of course, very good. Some got hurt and some made it all the way through the end. But Cade Beloso, I thought Cade Beloso, for the most part, had a pretty good year. But as far as position player, but you're right, they had two guys, and they know they got to fill some gaps in. It's one of those things Maneri talked about. He goes, you kind of wait to, a lot of these guys who transfer wait till after the major league draft to see where the gaps need to be filled on these certain teams. And then they kind of line up their transfer choices and see where they feel they can fit in the best. So it's kind of interesting. They always wait till after the draft and see what openings are there, and then they go for them.
We're speaking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, one last kind of question about the baseball team. You know, there was some scuttlebutt about Alan Dunn. Obviously, it appears that Paul Maneri is committed to him. That's been his longtime assistant. They are friends. There's a strong bond there. What about a conditioning coach or anything like that? Do we expect any changes moving forward regarding Dunn and regarding the conditioning coach?
Not really going to change Dunn. I mean, I'm in the camp. Alan Dunn has done nothing wrong. Alan Dunn, you know, the LSU's done everything they can to prevent injuries, and Alan Dunn has done everything he can to prevent injuries. And the blame he gets for injuries is so incredibly unfair. I think Alan Dunn's a hell of a pitching coach, and I think he understands health as far as the arms and stuff like that. LSU has advanced techniques to track, you know, arm strength and all that kind of stuff. It's one of those things. All these guys came in here hurt, and it's something they couldn't do about. You know, they rested him all during the, you know, last fall, trying to get him well. You know, I mean, and then some of them got hurt early in the year. But it, I mean, it wasn't due to the fact he was overworking them. They've been very careful about that. The strength coach, I don't know what they're going to do about that. I don't think they're stick with what they have or reevaluate what they do. But as far as Dunn is concerned, I don't think right now they should make any kind of move on Alan Dunn. I think he's gotten the blame for a lot of the concussion injuries that he shouldn't have gotten.
And what about something with conditioning? Could you see them doing something different with the way they condition, Ron?
Maybe there's a they can, but you know, but like I said, they've tried. I mean, they'll probably look at some new techniques or whatever, but. I mean, and then they will look at some new pay, and they're trying to figure out how they can cut down on the injuries. And it's something like, so they have all kinds of stuff they monitor. It's a puzzlement to Paul and to Dunn because they do monitor this stuff so closely. And then they really do. You know, and they bring back guys slow. I mean, you look at some of the guys that got hurt this year. I mean, it was a long time before they brought Cole Hinton. It was like a month after he got hurt. I mean, they were very careful of him. And he's still at the end of the year. I mean, last game of the year, after two innings of the last game, he said, I'm out. You know, it doesn't feel right. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that kind of puzzles them because they take time to bring guys back. You know, and you can only go by what the kid says, and the trainer, you know, tries to get the truth from the kids and how they feel, and you bring them back that slow, and they still get hurt. So it's something. Everything's being evaluated. I think Travis Roy has done a pretty good job as strength and conditioning coach. I think he's done a pretty good job. I just think a lot of these guys are getting blamed for stuff that. Like I said, a lot of these injuries were before they got here, and the LSU honored some of them after they got hurt because they felt it was the right thing to do. Maybe it backfired on them, maybe not, but there's still some guys who'd gotten hurt who've been slow to come back. And Eric Walker probably pitched more innings than anybody last year and still, you know, is not the pitcher he was 2 years ago when he was a true freshman because of the Tommy John surgery. Will he be better next year? I mean, if he can get some, you know, get some speed back in his fastball, he'll be okay. But right now, it's tough to watch him because he can only last like three innings before, you know, you go through a lineup one time, go through a Bengal one time, Eric Walker, and he starts getting hit. So they've got some problems to solve at pitcher.
Talking with Ron Higgins here of TigerDetails.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, I want to switch over to football. SEC Media Days will be next week. LSU starts things off on Monday with Coach Ed Orgeron. Do we know as of right now, Wednesday morning, which players they are going to be taking with them to SEC Media Days?
We don't know that. They're going to announce that today. I'm going to guess. This is strictly a guess. I'm going to say Joe Burrow Grant Delpit, and probably Rashard Lawrence. I tell those three probably. That's my guesses. They're going to put all the stuff will be announced today by the SEC. This is the 35th annual Media Days. I've been to all of them.
You, Ron, you've been to every single SEC Media Days?
Yep.
Wow.
It started, the very first one was at a downtown hotel in Birmingham. Had 10 head football coaches there, about 80 media members, and each coach had a round table that you could sit at and talk to. very quaint, very one-on-one. Very, it was very great. And as the years progressed, it's turned into this, you know, a thousand of my closest friends circus where it's a four-day event, a three-day, what is it, Monday, Tuesday, when it's four-day event. Because the first time they had 14 teams, they did it in 3 days. And Herb Benson, who used to be the LSU, who's the SEC PR guy, he asked me, because I said, you can't do this in 3 days anymore. You've got to do four. It's exhausting in 3 days. You've got to do four. You've got to spread it out. And they agreed. They changed it. And when the SEC Network came in, ESPN came in with TV, it kind of also changed the dynamic. It forced a bunch of sports writers to try to dress better since they were actually on TV asking questions. You know, they didn't just go pick out their freebie shirt out of the closet. They would pick up somewhere along the way. So a lot of them started dressing better for this. Radio Row is amazing. Probably usually 35 to 40 radio stations lined up next to each other in a long corridor that leads from the Winfrey Hotel to the Galleria Mall. It's the same. This has been mostly in Hoover. It's a great place to have it. I mean, it was in Atlanta last year at the College Football Hall of Fame and was kind of disjointed as far as the flow between radio down and where the radio was located and where the print media was located. But at Winfrey, it's much better. It's an amazing scene. In the lobby, they have a red rope cord, you know, red rope up to keep fans back who want autographs. Wednesday, when Nick Saban comes in that morning, it's like a Mardi Gras parade. The fans clamoring for autographs. It's quite a show. It really is. It's if you've never been to it, it's before you've never seen anything like it because it's it is rather amazing. But it's something that the SEC realizes. They probably hand out more credentials to this than anything else they do because they want to kind of really pump up the start of football season. And so they make it very special. So it's always a big deal. This is number 30. Yeah, this is number 35. Yeah. Because, you know, at one time before they had this, they had what they called the SEC Sky Riders. What the Sky Riders was, they, like, for about almost 20 years, they would pile on 45 or 50 riders onto a DC-3 plane and go from city to city.
Oh, wow.
In the SEC. And it was like something you've never, ever, if you experienced it, I missed it. I came in right after that, but I was there. I was working for LSU Sports Information when the Sky Riders came in, and my job was to go pick up all the liquor for them for the parties they had everywhere they went. But it was quite a scene. But finally, they kind of outgrew that, and they decided to do the media days, which had become a good idea. And the media days have advanced and grown and grown and grown. Like I said, and until last year when they moved it to Atlanta for a year, it'd been in Birmingham and then Hoover the whole time.
Ron, we'll wrap it up with this. We're talking with Ron Higgins of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, your best piece of advice for me to mentally prepare myself for the marathon that will be SEC Media Days next week, my friend. What kind of advice can you give me?
Move fast. Just, you know, take it in. Move fast. enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy all your radio brethren, because they'll be all around you. And you will have, you should have no problem getting guests, because they're always walking past you. You know, I mean, it is pretty amazing. It really is. I think you'll really enjoy it. And, you know, I'll be there. I'll make sure I'll stop by. And it's just a lot of fun. It's an atmosphere that really does get you pumped up for football. So you almost wish football would start, like, you know, a week after media days, because you're so pumped up and you're like, I got to wait. So it gets you ready to go, man. It gets you ready to go.
Ron, appreciate your time, brother. Can't wait to see you in Hoover next week on Tuesday, my friend. Appreciate your time, and get rested up for next week. I'll see you then.
All right, Raymond. Take care. We'll see you.
Ron Higgins, TigerDetails.com, joining us on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. That man has covered every SEC media day. Amazing. That's amazing. We got to hit a break, but you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Tremendous interview there with Ron Higgins. He will be joining us live from Radio Row next Tuesday morning. Just a reminder, RP3 and Company will be broadcasting live all 4 days from SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. We got Ron Higgins lined up on Tuesday. Our next guest coming up today, we got him lined up for Wednesday. That's Connor O'Gara, national columnist for Saturday Down South, will be joining us. He'll be coming up next to give us his thoughts on SEC Media Days and all things college football. Hey, and just a reminder, every weekday in July, someone new will win a cool $1,000, and it could be you. The Swinging for Cash contest on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, is going on right now. Listen for the keywords and enter them online at 103.7thegame.com for your chance to win cash. The Swinging for Cash contest on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We got to hit a break. Coming up next, Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, joins us right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free, over-the-air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is the senior national columnist for SaturdayDownSouth.com as well as SaturdayTradition.com. He's one of the best out there. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how you doing this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. Can't complain. We're like days away from media days. That means football is right around the corner. I couldn't be happier about that.
Connor, I appreciate you making time for us. My first question to you as you gear up to go back to SEC media days, your first time was last year, and we'll get to your experience with that. So what are you doing now with 1 year under your belt of SEC media days? How are you better preparing yourself for the mayhem that will be taking place in Hoover/Birmingham next week?
That's a good question. I think a lot of it is just kind of knowing what the overall setup is like. Because I've been going to Big Ten Media Days. This is actually the first year in my 5 years that I've been doing this that I'm not going to Big Ten Media Days. So I was a little bit more familiar with their setup and just the way that, you know, player availability works and all that. But just being more aggressive with talking with people in our business, of course, and, you know, just trying to make my way around to get the entire scope of the event. And I know it'll be different this year with it being in Birmingham, different for me because I haven't experienced what it's like at Hoover compared to, you know, what it was like last year in Atlanta. But I think just kind of being more aggressive with talking to people, and, you know, we have our podcast and stuff, so getting people to come on and do all that stuff, and making sure that I'm really soaking all of it in, because as you know, it's kind of a maze, and you get there and you have so much going on, you have so much that you want to accomplish and do from a work perspective, but just kind of taking in the atmosphere is something that I want to do a better job of this year.
Speaking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South and SaturdayTradition.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, what was your experience like last year, and maybe some of your favorite memories of covering SEC Media Days, which last year, of course, was in Atlanta there at the College Football Hall of Fame?
No, it was fun. I mean, it was a great time just getting to interact with the personalities that, you know, when you're not on the beat, you know, you're not seeing these people regularly. And I think one of my favorite things was just being able to interact and, you know, people that I've, you know, talked with over the phone or people that I've interacted with on Twitter or whatever, and just like actually getting to be in person and have conversations with them, because as you know, it's different in a game atmosphere. You know, you get to, you know, I cover about four or five games a year that I'll be on site for. And it's different when you're talking with somebody and, you know, it's got the press conference setting or something like that. And, you know, somebody is just coming off a big time win or a big time loss. It's just a totally different vibe. You know, I'm not necessarily there for practices and stuff. So I like it. And I know a lot of people say that, oh, media is just kind of, you know, it's a bit outdated, the premise of it. But for people like me, I think it's great. And I like getting to see some of these people in their more natural habitat. And I think that, you know, if you go in with that approach from a media perspective, it's a lot more of a rewarding week. And I get to see, you know, my coworkers and stuff who, you know, we're spread out across the country. But, you know, this year we're running an Airbnb, and we're all going to get to, you know, kind of interact and bounce ideas off each other. So it'll be great from, you know, from a content perspective as well. And, you know, last year, just kind of seeing the way that everything went down, just how much, you know, fans actually care about it. That's the thing that I think you can't overstate with the SEC. You know, other conferences don't have fans showing up and going crazy and surrounding coaches who basically, like, walk in on a red carpet. You know, it's just a totally different atmosphere, and I think that's kind of what makes the SEC what it is. So it's cool just kind of getting to see that up close for the first time and really getting to see the whole, you know, it just means more premise kind of out in the middle of July and seeing fans go crazy.
We're speaking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, what are you looking forward to this time around? Because, look, you don't have Les Miles that's going to be there in attendance with his memorable press conferences. You're not going to have Steve Spurrier talking trash, which was always a mainstay for his time at Florida and South Carolina. So what are maybe some of the buzzworthy stuff heading into SEC Media Days that you're going to keep an eye on? Is it Georgia, Florida, and that rivalry?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the things that's going to be addressed, too. I mean, how could it not be with all the back and forth that those teams have had this offseason, especially the fan bases? I mean, the war that's been going on social media has been a sight to see for sure. And Dan Mullen's going to have to address some of his roster attrition and dealing with, you know, losing four guys from his 2019 class, two to the transfer portal, two for not academically qualifying. And I think that the transfer portal subject, not just for Mullen, but just for SEC coaches in general, is going to be an interesting one to watch, because this is the first time that they're going to have to address it at Media Days, where they're surrounded by their peers. There's a little bit of an ego thing, and I think that certain coaches are going to get kind of frustrated with getting asked these questions about, oh, well, why have you lost this amount of players, or what do you think about just the way that things are going? And I know that the NCAA has come out with some more restrictions to it, but at the same time, I think that coaches are still going to have to answer some awkward questions about this, more than they've had to in years past. And I think, you know, players as well, that's going to be an interesting dynamic, seeing the way that players, these captains on a lot of these teams who, you know, usually you see these guys that say the politically correct answers. And how are they going to address the transfer portal when these are their friends, their teammates, guys who are being more empowered by the current system, and how are their responses different than what their head coaches are going to say? Because it's totally different for them. So I'm interested to see the way that that plays out. I think that's just a big subject overall with media days in general, not just with the SEC, but from a national perspective. And I think that we're going to get some interesting answers to those questions, and the quotes will be a little bit all over the place. But, you know, even in a year where, you know, you talk about not having a Les Miles or something like that, the big coach personalities really aren't there as much for the SEC. I think there are still a lot of interesting angles that will have some good hard news value.
Speaking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, you tweeted this out the other day, and you talked about since joining the SEC in 2000, Nick Saban's five teams that have come off a postseason loss, and that includes his time at LSU and at Alabama, have won a combined 66-5 the next season, 36-4 in the SEC, and they won four national championships. Do you expect to see a laser-focused Nick Saban at Media Day next week?
Absolutely. That's one of the things I am excited to see. You know, last year, seeing Saban coming off of a national title, all of the questions seem to be, or at least the questions that everybody wanted asked, was about the quarterback battle last year. But this year, it's this revenge tour, and seeing Saban coming off of not just a national title loss, but a historic blowout. I mean, he's never got beat like that. And to have that happen on such a big stage, yeah, I'm absolutely curious what his mindset looks like, because he's had to spend the entire offseason talking about, you know, his coaching turnover and what went wrong in that game and how is Bama going to be better and is Dabo passed him up. And, you know, he's going to be laser-focused. I absolutely expect that. I think that's been his mindset the entire offseason. Then again, you know, he's laser-focused coming off national titles. You know, the story about him at LSU where, you know, the LSU coaches come in basically the next morning after they won it all in, what was that, 2003 or whatever that year was, and they're, you know, coming into this meeting and everybody's looking around like, oh, Saban's like serious, 100% serious, and he's yelling at us just after we won a national title about how we're far behind in recruiting. That's who Nick Saban is, and I think that's how he is, win or lose. But yeah, I'm absolutely excited to see the way that he interacts and how laser focused he is, you know, this year with obviously something to prove, and he still wants to show that he's at the top of the college football world. And I think this is kind of the beginning of the revenge tour for him.
Talking with Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, I know the discussion of who the best quarterback in the SEC. It's a battle between Tua and Jake Fromm. Those are two guys that are also going to be in the Heisman Trophy discussion. But the number three spot, I think, is pretty much up for grabs. And there's a lot of talk about Kelly Bryant at Missouri, the former Clemson quarterback, a lot about Kelly Mond. What about Joe Burrow? Could Joe Burrow be the surprise quarterback of the SEC this coming season? Could he be a guy that could possibly earn all-conference honors and surprise some folks?
Oh, absolutely. I'm on the Joe Burrow bandwagon. And I've taken some flack because even in the middle of the season last year, I was writing how I still believed a lot in what he was doing, and I thought he did a lot of the little things well. And the versatility that he's going to be able to show in this offense now with Joe Brady on board, being able to run some of those RPOs and knowing the offense, just having a full year under his belt, we forget how late he arrived to camp last year, and having to get on the same page with all these different receivers and learning a new offense and doing all that and dealing with the lack of depth behind him at the backup quarterback situation where, you know, LSU lost two quarterbacks via transfer before the start of the season and they didn't sign a quarterback in that class. Miles Brennan was hurt, and the limited things that Steve Ensminger could do with Joe Burrow in that offense, knowing that the situation behind him was not good, and LSU was still in a playoff hunt last year and they wanted to keep Joe Burrow healthy, wasn't an easy thing to do at times because the tackle situation last year was not good. And I think that this year we're going to see him unleashed a little bit more, and we're going to see him in the running game, much like what he did against Texas A&M, what he did against UCF. I think that's more of what Joe Burrow wants to be. I'm not saying he's going to run the ball 25 times a game, but I think that there is room for him to become that guy. And I think that a lot of people might not realize that in terms of total yards, he had the best season since Jamarcus Russell for an LSU quarterback, and that's saying a lot. And I think that for all the flack that he took about his numbers and the lack of touchdown passes in the middle of the season, I still think that he did, throughout that process, he did such a great job winning over that locker room. I mean, you go back to that moment of the UCF game where he gets just demolished on the pick six, and he comes back up and he plays the game of his life. And, yeah, that's against UCF. It's group of five secondary. But I just like seeing the way that he reacts to those moments and what he did in that seven overtime game against A&M where he was trying to will his team to victory after, you know, let's be honest, it got a raw deal at the end of regulation there. So I am high on Joe Burrow. I absolutely think he can become the number three quarterback in this conference. I think as of right now, I have him at number four. I think the gap from number three to number seven, you could really, it's preference. You know, Kellen Mond is my number three right now. Then, you know, Burrow and Felipe Franks and Jared Garantano, Kelly Bryant, those guys are all very, very close. And I think that it's just a matter of personal preference at this point. It'll play itself out. But as of right now, I think the gap is very, very slim with all those guys, as you mentioned.
Wrapping up with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Connor, when all the dust settles and the media members vote, will there be more love and respect for LSU than there was last year when they were picked to finish fifth in the SEC West?
Gosh, if there's not. Just imagine that. No, there absolutely will be. It'd be bananas if there wasn't. I have LSU as my number five team nationally to start the year. So I think the tone has changed a little bit and realizing that the experience that they have is tremendous. I mean, you return somebody like Grant Delpit on the defensive side of the ball, somebody who, you know, earned All-America honors last year, and there's an argument to be made. I know Cole Kubelik made it yesterday that he's the best player in this conference this year, and it's hard to argue with that, with how well-rounded he was just as a playmaker in every facet of the game. And I think that on the offensive side of the ball, I just love what they're returning, especially in the passing game. I think that that's going to be so important for Joe Burrow to have a year under his belt with guys like Justin Jefferson, who, you know, really emerged last year and they developed with him. And I think that we're going to see that play out a lot. I've been on record saying I think LSU could have a top 20 offense this year. And I think that a lot more people are going to realize going into this year that this is not a pushover team. And this is not a team that's just going to fall off the face of the earth. They have playmakers galore. The secondary could easily be one of the best, if not the best, in the country this year. And there are big things expected out of Baton Rouge this year. And to say that they're going to be in the bottom half of the division would be just absolutely ludicrous.
Connor, appreciate you making some time for us today, brother. Can't wait to sit down with you live from Radio Row next Wednesday. And can't wait to see you then, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Yep, appreciate it. Looking forward to it, man.
Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South, joining us there on the ARCO Equipment Hell Hotline, helping us preview SEC Media Days, which will be next week. We got to hit a break, but we will wrap up today's show right after this break. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
I do, and nobody thought Steve Nash was, and he was two-time MVP, and right. People would have thought we were insane for even uttering that notion. Players in this league are so gifted. When you're as good as Drew Holiday is, what makes you take the next step is just your vision of self. And sometimes you need to be given permission to dominate people. And in his situation with Anthony around, I think he was always sort of waiting as though it was Anthony's job. And now Drew knows it's his job, and he's ready to do that.
It's now his job. David Griffin, Vice President of Basketball Operations for the New Orleans Pelicans, letting people know that he views his leader of his team, Drew Holiday, veteran, 29 years old, as a guy that could be an MVP candidate. And he said it with the utmost confidence. Backstory there, Griffin was part of the brain trust of the Phoenix Suns under Mike D'Antoni when Steve Nash won not one but two regular season MVP awards. And he's right. No one thought Steve Nash would ever become a league MVP, and that's exactly what he did. He's making that comparison as someone who saw that up close and personal, was part of that process, saw Steve Nash become a two-time league MVP. He's saying that Drew Holiday has permission to take over, has permission to dominate and be the leading force of this franchise, and he can be on the same level as a two-time league MVP. That tells you everything that you need to know about Griff and how he feels about Drew Holiday and how he feels that this is the guy that's going to be the leader in the face of the franchise. Drew Holiday now doesn't have a choice, you know, because his vice president of basketball operations, the leader of the Pelicans franchise, at least the leader of the front office, has now thrown down a challenge. Has basically said, it's his, get after it. You can be a league MVP. That's got to make Drew feel really good, though, because he's the guy that kind of thrives on being challenged and thrives on that, and he's such a driven individual to begin with. So I love it. I love what I hear from Griff. He hasn't made one bad move, one false move since he's taken over the Pels. Programming reminder. Jordy Hultberg Show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4 later today. That will be followed by a special edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports with the good brother Ben Love. He'll be live from the Quick Slants 7-on-7 at STM Cougar Field. It's going to be jam-packed. He's going to have coaches. He's going to have star players there joining him, so make sure to tune in. That's going to be appointment listening, ladies and gentlemen. Bumper to Bumper Sports live from Quick Slants 7-on-7 there at STM Cougar Field from 4 to 6 p.m. today. That will be followed by a full 2 hours of Five Guys Stories and Lies. That's right, the award-winning show featuring Don Allen, Glenn Quibbadeau, Bobby Ardwan, Bruce Brown, and Tom Brown. All five guys. You listen to them talk old stories. I bet you they'll talk about a little bit more about Tony Robichaux. I'll also be willing to bet you they talk about Coach Wagsback, who passed away as well. So make sure to tune in for that from 6 to 8 today. I want to thank our guest, Ron Higgins from TigerDetails.com, making time for us, talking all things LSU, as well as previewing a little bit of SEC Media Days. By the way, shout out to Ron for covering every single SEC Media Day. Also, thanks to Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, helping us preview SEC Media Days as well. We got a tremendous show lined up for you tomorrow. John Marques from the Town Talk at TownTalk.com is going to join us. James Yasko from the Lima Time Time podcast. He's going to help us preview the second half of the Astros season. And, of course, Les East, our good friend from CrescentCitySports.com, giving us updates on the Pels and Saints as well. Cody Schuch, you did a tremendous job as always, brother. Take a bow. Y'all be safe out there. We got some bad weather probably coming through today. So y'all be careful out there throughout Acadiana. We'll talk to you soon.